Today on Straight Talk Africa, many African nations have held elections. On Thursday, for example, Zambians go to the polls. But to what extent do these elections reflect the will of the people? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, August 10th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter. Happy to be back with you today.
Today, we'll talk about the types of elections that are held in Africa.
With passions running very high in some countries on the eve of their elections, coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topic du jour through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, former British Prime Minister Winston Churchill spoke of democracy as, quote, the worst form of government except for all the others, unquote. There have been unprecedented democratic gains on the African continent in recent times, but significant challenges persist. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
Elections are an important part of the democratic political process, but they do not necessarily equate with democracy or always faithfully reflect the will of the people. Zambia holds presidential and parliamentary elections on Thursday, August 11th. The race between President Edgar Lungu of the ruling Patriotic Front Party and Akaenda Echilema of the United Party for National Development is expected to be close. The Southern African nation has seen more peaceful transitions of power than its African neighbors. President Lungu has been in power since winning a very close, mostly peaceful poll in January 2015, following the sudden death of President Michael Sata in 2014. Last month, Zambian authorities suspended some UNDP campaigning due to escalating political violence. Former Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan, who leads the African Union's election observer mission in Zambia, believes the vote will be carried out in a satisfactory manner, despite accusations from both sides of voter intimidation and violence. In March 2015, the Nigerian election of Muhammadu Buhari over Goodluck Jonathan marked the first time an incumbent president and ruling party had been defeated at the ballot box in Africa's most populous nation. The peaceful campaign and transfer of power is universally viewed as a major triumph for democracy in Africa. In March, businessman Patrice Talon defeated Benin's Prime Minister Lionel Zinsou in a runoff vote after incumbent President Toma Boni Yayi was constitutionally barred from running for a third term. The free and fair multi-party election in Benin is also considered a significant victory for African democracy. Elsewhere in Africa, democracy deficits persist. Five leaders have ruled for more than 30 years. Many others for more than 20 years. Authoritarian leaders in Zimbabwe, Sudan, Uganda, Ethiopia, Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda are holding onto power by either amending laws, repressing the opposition, corrupting civil society organizations, and/or staging less than transparent elections. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. For an update on the latest political developments in Zambia, we are joined by my colleague, Peter Kelote, host of VOA's Nightline Africa radio program. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Shaka.
Peter, you've been covering the electoral process in Zambia very, very closely. What's the latest from your sources in as far as security is concerned on the ground?
Well, Shaka, campaign officially ended a few hours ago in Zambia, where intense campaigning between the ruling party, the Patriotic Front, and the main opposition party, the UPND, have been going on so far. So far, so good. Violence has been reduced sharply after intense campaigning and counter accusations between the two main parties. Supporters of the parties have accused each other of voter intimidation, harassment, among other things. But the police have also been accused of trying to support the ruling party supporters by not holding them accountable when they attack supposedly supporters of the UPND, the main opposition party.
Now, talk to us about the issue of printing the election ballots, because we gather that despite the fact that there were more competitive bids from South African companies, which is obviously very, very nearby, the Electoral Commission of Zambia had to go all the way to Dubai. Why did that happen?
I asked officials of the Electoral Commission, and one of the things they said led them to make the decision was they open up a bidding process, which the laws of Zambia allow, and the competitiveness allowed even the South African companies to come forward, but they were not able to meet the rigorous policies and rigorous mandate that the Electoral Commission put across. So the company that won the bid is in Dubai, and the Electoral Commission officials said they are more efficient, and the security at which they produce the sensitive materials are above board, and that is why they decided to go there. And they went through the bidding process, and that was adjudged to be free, fair, and transparent. However, opposition forces say that Zambia did not have the money to go to Dubai to pay for the voting materials to be printed. They would rather have it in Zambia. But the Electoral Commission finally prevailed, and then they gave the award to the Dubai-based company to print the ballot papers, which will be used for tomorrow's elections.
Peter, we gather that tomorrow's election is too close to call. And we're talking about, of course, the competition between the ruling party, the Patriotic Front, or PEF, and the United Party for National Development, or UPND. So we're talking, frankly, here about Edgar Lungu, who, of course, is the president, and Hakainde Hichilema, a man, of course, who is trying State House for the fifth time.
Well, Shaka, in the last by-election when President Michael Sata died and President Lungu contested, he won with less than 3% of the point against Hakainde Hichilema. So Hakainde Hichilema believes that Edgar Lungu has performed poorly and has not been able to turn around the economy as he promised. The Copper Belt has been suffering, which has used to be the main support base of the Patriotic Front. So he believes, Hakainde Hichilema, that is, that he is capable of wrestling power for the first time from Edgar Chagwa Lungu. It remains to be seen if he's able to pull it off, because recently he accused, or the UPND accused the Patriotic Front of planning to rig the elections in favor of Edgar Chagwa Lungu. Edgar Chagwa Lungu, however, challenged the UPND to come up with its allegation, evidence, to the security agencies to prove that indeed there is such a plan to rig the election.
Any particular reason why there were major defections from the ruling party? Peter, we're talking about a guy called Scott Guy, who, of course, as you know, used to be the acting president of Zambia as soon as, of course, Michael Sata died. And we're talking about the son of former president, of course, Michael Sata, and wife, and of course, another former important minister, Geoffrey Mwamba, who, of course, now happens to be Hichilema's running mate.
Well, it's been interesting to see the escape or the defection from the main opposition, the main ruling party, the Patriotic Front, to the UPND. However, you also have former President Rupia Banda, who served as the presidential candidate for the Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, or MMD, officially endorsing Edgar Chagwa Lungu for re-election. So it's been going both ways. Politics in Zambia has been that way, where you have people switching back and forth depending on where they come from, because some people say that even the current president of the Patriotic Front, Edgar Lungu, used to be a member of the MMD himself. So they keep on switching back and forth depending on where the wind blows, unfortunately.
Rupia Banda, of course, is an incredible man. A man, of course, one of those people who have, one of the few people, frankly, on the continent, was the distinction for having been an incumbent president, lost an election, and conceded defeat with grace.
He did, he did. And he's being held currently as one of the flag bearers of Africa's democracy, because he lost a legitimate election and he handed over peacefully.
Of course, the first person was the founding president himself, Kenneth Kaunda.
Yes, he did.
Back in 1991. Well, thank you so much, Peter.
You're welcome.
It was a pleasure.
Same here. You bet.
Joining us in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Edith Walinga Kamau, graduate student, University of California, Berkeley, School of Journalism, and Mohamed Abdirizak, founder and chief executive director, Somali One, is also a presidential candidate in the upcoming elections in Somalia. Well, I have to say, frankly, Edith and Mohamed, how profoundly honored I am to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka, for having us.
Definitely.
You're most welcome. Last but not least is Priscilla Isaac, Director of Elections, Electoral Commission of Zambia, who joins us via telephone link from the capital, Lusaka. Good evening, Ms. Isaac.
Good evening, Shaka Sali, Idiso, and Mohammed.
Well, I have to say that I'm equally profoundly honored. Profoundly honored and of course, privileged, frankly, to have the opportunity to host you too for the first time, I think, on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. It's an honor.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me stay with you, Priscilla, for a while, because I know that you want to be able to stay with us for the next couple of minutes before you leave. What is the situation like on the ground? Are you in a position to hold an election that is free, fair, and credible?
Yes, we are, Shaka Sali. I'm pleased to say that almost all the districts have finished the deployment of staff, and the reports that I'm getting from the remaining districts is that they're winding up with the deployment of poll staff and election materials this evening. So we're all set to go for tomorrow. And I must say, I must commend all our field officers who have worked really hard and with a lot of commitment to ensure that we have everything in place for tomorrow.
What about the issue of printing the election ballots in Dubai when, in fact, you could have had them printed, frankly, across the border there, across the river Limpopo?
Well, like what Peter explained earlier on, we opened up because of the high value of the supply of ballot papers. We did open up the tender, both internationally and locally, and it was open for competition by prospective suppliers. And we have a very rigorous tender procedure because we have to follow the Public Procurement Act, which we did to the letter. And the Dubai company came up tops in terms of technical requirements and also in terms of value.
So how do you respond to some voices in the opposition and the civil society who, in fact, have been speculating that there is a potential for rigging the poll?
Well, for me, who has been in this election business for many years now, it is an accusation that we face each election and is yet to be proven.
To what extent would you say that the political playing field was leveled for all the parties involved, really?
Well, we did. I guess we still have a challenge in that area, like most countries do. There's the issue of incumbency and so forth. But as an electoral commission, we do our best to respond to any issues where unfairness is brought to our attention. I know we did have challenges with the public media, especially with our national broadcaster, where opposition political parties complained that they were not being given enough coverage especially during news and so forth. Then there were complaints against the police in terms of the administration of the Public Order Act. But I would say that with our intervention, there was some improvement, especially in the management of political rallies by the parties participating in the elections. We also invited the heads of public media to a meeting with ourselves and the participating political parties to discuss these issues. And it was hoped that, you know, at least there would be an improvement. And I would say there was an improvement to some extent, though we did have to push a bit towards the end in terms of some last coverage for the opposition. But I hope going forward in future, these issues can be addressed. The challenge we have as an electoral commission is that, unlike our colleagues in India who are practically in charge of everybody and can direct and order even the police, we as the electoral commission in Zambia do not have those kind of powers. But we do our best to intervene, and I would say that we do get cooperation to a certain extent.
Very interesting. Now, we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And on today's discussion, with your questions and comments, don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa Elections. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiu Ewart, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come back to you, Priscilla. There are people who say that the state and the ruling party in your country of Zambia are fused, really, that there is no separation, frankly, of the ruling party and the state. If true, to what extent, frankly, do you expect to have an election that is credible?
Well, I wouldn't want to comment really on that. I'm not a politician. Our job as the Electoral Commission is to ensure that we facilitate the participation of the Zambian electorate in an election, and also at the same time, through the limited powers that we have, try and ensure as much as possible that there are fair conditions for the participation by the political parties. We do have avenues through political party liaison committees and conflict management committees where complaints can be channeled through. And these have proved to be effective. As a commission, we are also able to reprimand any political party that is found wanting. And there's another power that we've been given, the power of qualification of a candidate or political party that is found to be in breach. But of course, that would be the very last resort that the commission would want to take. So we believe that the electoral laws, in terms of our powers, can still be strengthened further, like being able to provide for the suspension of an erring candidate or political party. And I think going forward from this election, there will be need for further review. But as a commission, we are of the view that it would make life much easier for everybody if all the political parties did their part and observed the rules of the game, including the ruling party. And we always remind the ruling party, whichever ruling party that has been in power at any given time, that they have the greater responsibility of leading by example. And like I have said, to a certain extent, we do get cooperation when we intervene and call upon for issues to be attended to.
To what extent are you sincerely independent if you were to talk to us from the deepest better part of the bottom of your heart or the bottom of your Zambian heart and soul? I say this because many years ago, a former Zambian president, Frederick Chiluba, told me that in fact he was able to regain Patrick Levi Mwanawasa in 2001, a race he said should have been won by Mr. Mazoka.
Well, speaking for myself and the commission, as it is and has been previously, we are an independent institution. We are not subject to the control or direction of any person or authority. And I will quite honestly say that we've been able to stand up even to government and the ruling party if there has been need to, and, you know, guide on what the provisions in the law are. And that's what elections are all about. The most important thing when you are in the management of elections is to operate within the law, whether it is a favorable law or not, whether any of the stakeholders are in agreement with the law or not. Immediately you operate outside the law when you are in the business of elections, you are shooting yourself in the foot. You'll never be justified for operating outside the law, especially once you find yourself in the midst of a petition. And mind you, the independence of the commission may not necessarily be compromised by the ruling party, because that's the impression that because the president is the appointing authority of the commission, then the commission is not independent. A commission will be as independent as you, the individuals who work in that commission, make it. Because the law may provide for independence, but if you don't abide by that law and do what is right within the law, then you'll be compromised. But equally, other stakeholders can interfere in the operations of the commission and try and keep its independence, be it opposition party, be it civil society, where people feel that they know better and want the commission to do only what they want. It doesn't work like that. It's not a question of what you as a stakeholder want. It's a question of what is the law and whether the commission is implementing the law or not.
Now, talking about the elections, of course, you need to have been able to conduct adequate civil education. To what extent were you able to do that, especially given some complaints that people, frankly, do not even understand what sort of referendum they are going to be voting on? It, of course, involves the Bill of Rights. What exactly is the Bill of Rights?
Well, the Bill of Rights is the fundamental rights that the person is entitled to, and they are found in the Constitution, and they're non-negotiable. And as a commission, we have done our best to enlighten the Zambian people, because those are your inherent rights as a human being that you are entitled to. So we've done our best to enlighten the Zambian people through our voter education program. But you see, one thing that people always forget or think is that it's the sole responsibility of the commission to do voter education. It's not. The political parties have a duty to conduct voter education. The civil society have a duty to conduct voter education. And what we do is supposed to be supplementary. And it is in recent years that voter education was actually put into the electoral legislation as one of our mandates. Previously, it was not. And so at least now we're able to get funding for it. But admittedly, given the short period of time before the election, the voter education program for the referendum was challenging, but we did our best to reach the masses through our over 3,000 foot soldiers that we have countrywide. We produced a lot of material, which we translated into Braille and into our seven vernacular official languages, including English. And we use the community radio stations for those receiving the urban areas. We did publicity on TV. We did mobile publicity. We did as much as we could. And we do hope that at least our efforts will be seen as people go to the polls tomorrow.
Ms. Isaac, when should we expect, especially, the presidential results?
Well, our target for the final presidential results would be about 48. We're looking at 48 hours after the close of the last polling station. The polls close at 18 hours, which is 6 p.m. Tomorrow evening. And then thereafter, the counting of all the four elections plus the referendum, making it five, will be done at our 7,700 polling stations. And then the results have to be taken physically to the constituency totaling center. So given the time it will take to add, to count the five elections at the polling stations and then transmit and then deliver them to the constituency centers, that may take a bit of time. And so we are hoping that within 48 hours of the close of the last polling station, we should be able to have the final results. We are hopeful that all polling stations, the majority of polling stations, will open on time tomorrow and close on time as well in the evening.
Well, on that note, Ms. Isaac, it was a pleasure hosting you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you so much, Shaka Sali. It was a pleasure too.
Good luck to you. Program. Good luck to you and your country. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Good night.
You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jero. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of what you had to say on the Zambian elections through our social media platforms. Stay with us.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African Beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidi-Ewart, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Zambia's general elections is set for Thursday, August 11th. the office of the president and seats in the National Assembly are being contested. A constitutional referendum will also be held with proposals to amend the nation's Bill of Rights. So lots happening in the beautiful nation of our friend Kenneth Mwanda. Wish you were here helping us understand the process maybe next time. But anyway, let's take a look at our question of the week, which asks, are the African elections truly elections or merely selections of powerful incumbent candidates? Well, we'll start with a viewer, listener in Zambia who answered our question in this letter of the week.
Lubembu Beksi Masaiti from Zambia writes, we had peaceful elections so far under the reign of Priscilla Isaacs. She's one tough iron lady and quite inspiring. Zambia has been enjoying democracy and is a shining example in Africa despite economic hardships. Women like Priscilla run the elections smoothly. Other African countries should use us as an example.
Well, that was Lubembu Beksi Masaiti from Zambia with obviously all the praises for Electoral Commission head Priscilla Isaac. Well, let's move on to other comments. This time, I think we'll begin with Twitter with a reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Africa Elections. And if you haven't yet, do follow us on Twitter. Speaking of it, let's go to Peter Isaac. We have a lot of Isaacs today from Tanzania. Another one, not sure if at all he's related to the commissioner, but he tweets that ranking of presidents are arranged by powerful leaders, so citizens are only witnesses. Another tweet from Dio Shayo, who says that elections aren't really elections, rather constitutional formalities. Democracy is redefined. Let's take a look at two more tweets, starting with Emmanuel Kachele, who posted that African elections are not only selections of incumbent leaders, but also replacements of monarchs over monarchs. One last tweet while we're at it, this time from Habat Nukula, who expresses that voting is a waste of time. The Electoral Commission already has results of the election before the polls. Wonder once again how Priscilla would have reacted to this kind of comment. Let's now turn to our Facebook followers and go to a comment from Josh DeJoe from Ruria in Tanzania, who writes that in most African countries there are no real elections, rather there are selections. Most of the ruling parties are not ready to peacefully leave office to their opponents. Well, Shaka and guests, lots of comments from so many people. Your take on these ones?
Very interesting. What about you, Welinga? Your reaction?
Well, I mean, you kind of have to take into account what people are saying. You know, are these elections that are happening on the continent, are we just having incumbents coming back? And when you talk about this, I think you have to consider the question of electoral commissions. You know, are these independent? Are these acting fairly? Who's putting together the team that makes up this this commissions? And, you know, there's this saying, don't bite the hand that feeds you, right? So if a president will put together this electoral commission, will they act fairly? You know, will they act independently? I don't know.
Especially in countries where the state happens to be the single largest employer and the single largest contractor. Very interesting. Any more reaction from the audience, Mariam?
Yes, let's go to one from Mohamed Diallo from Kenema in Eastern Sierra Leone, who writes that in some African countries there are no elections, but rather it is selections from the few elites and some international groups. There will never be free and fair elections. That's what he writes. And let's look at another comment. This time from Bright Ose from Ghana. She writes that Ghana is going into an election this year with Charlotte Ose as the first female Electoral Commission chairman. We are confident that she can handle the election peacefully. In the unlikely event of post-election tensions, we must support her. Well, a very positive comment here. Looks like the sisters, this time the electoral commissioner heads, all ladies, are getting a lot of praises. But I guess I'm going to let you, Shaka, and the guests react to these comments.
Mohammed, your reaction, please.
I think, first of all, I want to congratulate Ms. Isaacs. And I think the challenge that she has in circumstances given, she is doing a good job. I wish I could say the same thing of our own country in Somalia, mm-hmm. Where the election commission, the way it was formed, is unconstitutional. Security, which Zambia now enjoys peaceful, the security situation is very much different, is also different. The constitution is being respected. All of these are important elements for elections to take place, and elections that are credible, that the people can feel that they can trust the results of the elections and therefore give the government legitimacy. These are not in place in Somalia.
I think it would be really a tall order, especially given that there was absolutely no central government in Somalia for about 21 years.
Absolutely. Somalia's state collapsed, as you know, 2.5 decades ago. We're in the process of reviving our collapsed state. Mm. And this process requires a great deal of compromise, trust building, reconciliation, and patriotism. The current government of Somalia had the mandate to prepare the country for multi-party elections. It had the mandate of reviewing and finalizing the constitution. Above all, it had the mandate of improving the security. These are all important elements for elections to take place. It failed in all fronts. And instead, what we have is a group of leaders who are performing outside of the constitution, and that will not give legitimacy to the coming elections. I like what one of your tweeters said, and these are selections merely what's happening in Africa.
We'll come to a little bit more of that later in the program. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. On the agenda, South Sudan's political turmoil, recent African elections, and the latest on Boko Haram. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. And today, of course, we are talking about the types of elections that are held in Africa. Our distinguished guests are Edith Waringa Kamau, graduate student, University of California, Berkeley School of Journalism, and Mohammed Abdelazak, founder and the Chief Executive Director, Somali One, and a presidential candidate in the upcoming elections in Somalia. Well, I have to say again, Waringa and Mohammed, I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thanks for having us, Shaka.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. I have to come again to you, Mohammed, because I had the dubious privilege of cutting you off simply because there's no democracy in Studio 52. We are told to go, you have to go. Now, we're talking about Somalia, but one aspect or part of Somalia that people don't seem to talk about and where things seem to be happening the right way is Somaliland. Mm-hmm. Why are there significant differences between what is now Somaliland and Somalia?
Well, Somaliland enjoys a greater deal of stability compared to the rest of the country.
Why?
Well, you know, it is people are conscious to keeping their peace. They have a government that is responsive and that...
That is very democratic, as a matter of fact.
And yes, enjoys a greater democracy compared to the rest of the country. There is a greater citizen participation in politics in Somaliland compared to the rest of the country. And all of these contribute to the progress that Somaliland has made over the last two decades.
You know, when I was an undergraduate student studying political science, and I was told that one of the few countries on the African continent that in fact could qualify to be nations, not nation states, but nations, was Somalia.
Yes.
You had no different tribes, different ethnic communities. You were just one people, even almost one religion to boot.
Yes.
So what happened?
Well, what happened is a long story, but the conflict in Somalia has over the years evolved. And what keeps Somalia a fragile state, a broken state, a collapsed state, changes over time. Right now, we're so close to really reviving our collapsed state. And what we need, and this is something that I've made the central pillar of my campaign, is to have reconciliation and therefore Somali unity. And until you have that, you're not going to be able to handle the security situation. You're not going to earn the respect and the confidence of the Somali people, which is necessary to govern this country. And that is what is missing.
Very interesting. Walinga, let's go to your country, beautiful Kenya. You just learned, of course, that you now have the team of nine people who made up the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission stepping down. Mm-hmm. What does that mean now? Great opportunities here for perhaps holding a credible election next year?
This is a make or break moment for Kenya, you know, as we go into our election next year. Whoever ends up on that IEBC will kind of determine the, you know, how we're going to handle this election. So it's critical who ends up on that commission and who appoints people to end up on that commission. So we have some people saying, you know, let's have members of the clergy join that commission because what, they're politically impartial. You know, that's one way to look at it. Other people are saying, well, let's have each party kind of nominate somebody to be on that commission. And there's different approaches to how we can deal with this. But what ultimately is the fact is that it's important whoever ends up on there and how they will act will kind of really, really determine how Kenya goes in terms of this election.
Is there any human being, frankly, who can attain the standard of being neutral?
That's a tough question. I feel like everybody has a bias, you know?
Exactly. You are in favor of something or biased in favor of one thing or the other. So if that is true, then why don't we, in fact, become politically realistic? Why don't we involve the different political parties that are participating in terms of nominating someone who should be representing their interests?
That is one way that they're trying to deal with it too, Shaka. That's one of the ways that they're trying to say, okay, how about each party kind of nominates somebody and has a seat at the table on this commission? Will that be, you know, the way forward? Will they say, some people are saying, well, let's have the power, the party that has the most representation in parliament, maybe they have the most representatives on the IEBC. Is that going to solve everything? I don't know.
Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Tafa from Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Tafa, can you hear me? Tafa, can you hear me? What about Cliff from Uganda?
Good evening, Ndugushaka. How are you?
I'm hugely terrific. How are you today?
Very terrific.
Well, I'm afraid your telephone obviously doesn't seem to be equally terrific. Let's go to Tedla from New York. Good afternoon, Tedla.
Yes, good afternoon, Shaka.
I'm hugely terrific. It's a very long time since I last heard your beautiful voice, Tedla.
Yes, thank you very much, Shaka. For me, in the last 25 years, I have witnessed in my country, Ethiopia, many, many, many things in the name of election. But let me be honest with you, Shaka. Before any election in any country in Africa, the African people should have the basic rights. The basic rights to organize themselves, free media. All these necessary conditions has to be fulfilled before we practice the so-called election. For me, it is a waste of time in most of African countries. The African people are allowed only to speak once, maybe in 5 years before the election time. Even after the government believes, claims 100% win, in Ethiopia now we are witnessing revolt from north to south, from east to west. That shows you that whatever we are calling election in every 5 years is a fake practice, and we should stop it. We should not even waste time for this kind of so-called election. So this is a total waste of time.
Now, Tedla, you seem to be saying that what is frankly, as far as you are concerned, important or more important is perhaps service delivery. Are you suggesting by any measure that service delivery and freedom of expression, or freedom for that matter, is mutually exclusive, or is it in fact mutually reinforcing?
What I'm suggesting, Shaka, is that from the local level, Africans should be empowered. Africans should have full participation in their community. Once you block that system, and then you come at a national level, talk about election, it doesn't give sense. So for us, it's the people who are not allowed to say a word publicly. When there is no free media in any countries, in such countries, what are we talking about the so-called election every 5 years? It is totally unattainable. It is a waste of time. I suggest for Africans, rather than conducting fake election, we better fight for the right to assemble, for freedom of speech, for media independence, and then we talk about election after that. Shaka.
Very, very interesting. Mohammed, you come from a wealth of experiences. You worked with the National Democratic Institute, and you were able for many years, therefore, able to preach the gospel, really, according to democracy in Africa. How far did you go, and what kind of response or reaction did you get as you interacted with people? Did they see a value or values in what is considered to be democracy?
Yes, of course, countries, Africa is so diverse, and countries are at different stages of their democratic developments. And in the case of Somalia, what we're dealing with is very, very, very basic. And what we have deliberately chosen, and that the international community has helped us with, is to first form a state, which then, from there, organizes elections, does civic education, and gets all the other governance issues in place. And when I worked for NDI, these were basically what we were doing, training of the parliamentarians, helping the parliament establish itself, helping with rules of procedures. And elections are something that would come later. But I believe that in the last 4 years, a great opportunity has been lost. The current government could have done better in preparing the country for elections.
So given that you also seem to say that you do not really have, an environment, frankly, that would allow perhaps a process, frankly, of open competition for that matter, then why, in fact, are you trying to offer yourself to run for the presidency of Somalia?
Thank you for asking this question. It's a very tough question, but I appreciate it nevertheless. First of all, I want to help my country to see an example of what it is like, you know, to have choices. You have a candidate in me that runs on issues, that has a history, that people can see all of this information. Somalia, like many other African countries, 70% of the population is under the age of 30. Mm-hmm. I have a greater appreciation for technology and social media and all of these things, and I can better connect with the younger people, which is the majority of the country, and there is an opportunity for me to have a constructive relationship, constructive messaging to these young people, to talk about what is missing, what we need, where we are, and where we need to go. And this is something that I'm able to do. I'm also challenging the current president and his government because I want to show them that there can be another way of doing, and if we don't speak for ourselves, this will not happen. That is the message that I'm essentially giving to all Somalis. Of course, I also believe that I will win if I continue in the current course of sharing my messages and mobilizing people.
What makes you think that you are the best man for the job?
That is for the voters to decide. Unfortunately, this time we don't have a universal suffrage in Somalia. We will have a parliament of 275, and for the first time, an upper house is going to be established of a number that has changed in the last few days. The two chambers of the parliament will vote. I hope to convince, based on the issues that I have, based on my experience and credibility, that I am the best candidate out there.
You have been in the country. I have seen some of the pictures that you took while you were interacting with the people. What was the reaction from the ground?
Amazing. I am the first candidate who, since 1969, went out to the villages and the districts and talk to people openly. Now, I know, Shaka, these people are not able to vote for me, but still, I think it is very important that we listen to them, we reach them, and we tell them what they should demand from their government. And the reaction has been tremendous. It's been great.
Very interesting. Walinga, you are a very young lady. Someone might say, of course, this is your moment, your generation's moment, really. What is it that you would like to see happening to your country and to the African continent that is not happening now?
I think young people need to realize how powerful we are. Africa is the youngest continent in the world right now. That's a lot of power. Mm-hmm. You know, if we come out and vote for issues, and vote for people that are taking our agenda forward, they're going to give us jobs, they're going to create better healthcare, they're going to improve our infrastructure, open up our countries for trade, create opportunities for us. If young people, we can just understand how powerful we are, we can change a lot of things. But again, I think the challenge for most people, a lot of young people on the continent, is I'm not sure if the way electoral systems are set up on the continent, if they work in favor of young people to rise and join the political class or like be in leadership in different countries on the continent. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to look at how much money you need to spend for elections. And one of the things that IEBC did in Kenya is they actually just passed rules that kind of limit how much you can use during campaign and during elections. Mm-hmm. Will that help us in the short term as young people who are trying to get into leadership? Maybe not, but long term, maybe, you know? And so I think we just need to realize how powerful our vote is and kind of rally behind that.
What about the generation that is in power now across the continent? Why does it look like it, frankly, has lost connection with its own people? I mean, you see sometimes some optics, which obviously speak very, very loudly. You see two presidents meeting, for example, on a common border, putting on three-piece suits. And the surroundings and the people around there are probably, frankly, not very decently dressed. And yet, these are supposed to be leaders of those people. I have been to Juba, even in 100 degree heat Fahrenheit. You see the elite in suits driving hammers almost on no roads. And majority of people are internally displaced right there in their own capital.
Yeah.
And this is not a country that is poor. This is a country that could be the breadbasket of the entire region and the Middle East, if in fact it was under cultivation. It is not. This is a country that has oil and gas to boot, gold, you name it, and very few people.
Well, I think it comes back to the issue of accountability. When we see our leaders doing this, are we holding them accountable and saying, well, you're able to enjoy that, but what about me? I don't have a job, I don't have education, I don't have this, that, and the other. We need to then hold our leaders accountable when you see them doing this. And I think sometimes maybe we're too quick to forget, you know, maybe they'll come out, give a few handouts here and there, and we forget. And we forget that once they leave, we're still being left in this situation where not much has changed for us. And also, our leaders just also just need to be more accountable for themselves too, on their own part.
Really?
Yeah.
Mohammed, if you were to talk to the people in Somalia, if they were watching you right now on Straight Talk Africa through their television monitors or accessing you through their radios and what have you, what is it that you'd like to say to them that you think is very, very important and perhaps very empowering to them?
Thank you, Shala. What I would say to them is that the change you want to see, it starts with you. Today, you need to talk to your elders, those who will select the next MPs. You need to talk to your MPs and say, this is what we need. These are the, give them a category of the what you really would like to see, and let them choose for you, because this is an indirect election, the kind of leadership that will take the country forward.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm elected in Somalia, I promise to take the country in 2020 to a multi-party election, because there are certain steps that one needs to take, and this is what I've been working on, so I know the way.
I see. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the passing of our dear friend and colleague, Ashenafi Abeje, who passed away over the weekend. He was 66. Born in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, Ashe is a man I will always remember as a gentleman and an officer. Among other institutions, he attended the George Washington University, one of the pioneers of the Voice of America's Amharic service. He worked for VOA for more than 3 decades and retired last June. Ashe and I created and launched Straight Talk Africa on August 2nd, 2000. The entire VOA family and I extend our heartfelt condolences to his family and friends. May his soul rest in eternal peace. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Edith Waringa Kamau, graduate student, University of California, Berkeley School of Journalism, Mohammed Abdulrazak, presidential candidate in the upcoming elections in Somalia, and Priscilla Isaac, director of Elections Electoral Commission of Zambia, who joined us earlier via telephone link from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next on tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.